Hoje acordei sem lembrar se vivi ou se sonhei. Você aqui nesse lugar que eu ainda não deixei. Esse tempo está lá atrás e eu ainda gosto dela, mas ela já não gosta tanto assim. A porta ainda está aberta, mas da janela já não entra luz. E eu ainda penso nela, e ela já não pensa mais em mim não. Applause. I want to be applauded for this marvelous, marvelous solo career. I mean, because Steph was going to sing with me, but she didn't think I chose a song she didn't know.
Yes. Yeah, I got a little lost. I have to admit, I got lost, but I was dancing. You can't see it because this is podcast, but
she was like
dancing.
Waving a lighter. Like,
yes, I was. I was like almost saying "Free Bird," but then I didn't. So yeah. Hi guys. Hi people.
Hello.
Not guys. People.
Mm. Yes, let's not be that exclusive here, Matt. Yeah. Matt, sorry, Steph. Sorry.
Especially because today, as we are recording this, today is International Women's Day, so I'm not saying hi to any guys today because I don't have to. Welcome to Suspiria.
Hello. Yes, Suspiria this time around.
Yes, I'm Stephanie.
And I am Carol.
And today we are bringing you another crazy case from our homeland in Brazil. And Carol sang a song by this band called, we pronounce it Skanky, but it's actually Skank.
Skank,
it's
yeah.
Skank. From my
hometown. Never noticed it. Right? Yeah, yeah. Because the victim today is from Steph's hometown, Belo Horizonte.
Yes.
So, Skank is a really good band. You guys should check it out.
You should. Literally type Skank, like, if you say your mama's a skank,
yeah,
just type that, but without the your mama.
Yeah,
they're really good. They actually are not a band anymore. I think they broke up last I think it was like last fall or something, but they had like a 30-year career, so
yeah
it's
all right. So welcome to this new episode. We're gonna cover the case today of Aida Cury. Aida's case was shocking and it changed. It's like one of those cases that really like mark a generation, you know, and to this day it's still like everyone's still kind of shocked about it, you know, even though it doesn't seem that outrageous like right now, you know, like looking back there's many cases that are just like this one, so why would this one be any different? But it's, I think, the nuances of the era and the nuances of what was happening, like context wise and, you know, when and where it happened, and it's what I want to say. So this happened like in 58 in Rio, Copacabana, right? But it was like right after Brazil won like a World Cup. Everyone was super happy. Everyone was like, you know, spirits were like super high. People were doing good. Like Brazil was doing good as a country. I can't like verify that claim for all of Brazil, but like in general the spirits were pretty high, you know, especially because of soccer and all. Like usually
everything in Brazil revolves around soccer, guys. So if the national team is doing good, then we're doing good. And that's the same, it's also true for like states. Like right now my soccer team is going through some hardships in like losing a bunch of stuff, and like people in my hometown, like half of the hometown, is not very happy about it because the team's not doing well, so it affects everybody's moods.
It's bad to say that everything revolves around soccer like in Brazil. Not saying that you said it, but like, you know what I mean, like it's kind of overly simplistic to look like for, you know, gringos to look at it and be like, yo, Brazil, soccer, etc. But like it is kind of like that though, that like it's a social meter. Like, you know, it depends on like if soccer is going good, society is going good. If soccer is doing bad, like it's been doing bad since like 20s, 2006, what? No, not even 2006, like 2002, right?
That was the last World Cup that we won, yeah.
Yeah. It's been increasingly bad. Like, we're going downhill.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. We're not the country of soccer anymore, I guess.
We're not.
So, yeah, this is a scenario. So, it was kind of like a punch to the gut when this crime happened, like, right next to a World Cup victory. It really shocked people. Mm-hmm. So, our sources for today was an episode of Linha Direta, which is the reenactment show that we always watch as a source for this episode, for the show. And it is a great source, although they often miss some details. But it's interesting to see the reenactment. It's interesting to see things playing out.
Great true crime show.
Yeah. And also articles from Cruzeiro and Wikipedia for names, dates, and such. This case is a severe lack of sources. Like, severe. But, I mean, the sources that we do get, you do get a whole overview of this story. Yeah. So, Aida Jacob Cury was born on December 17th, 1939, in Belo Horizonte. Steph's time to shine here.
I can tell you guys all about Belo Horizonte and all the bars. So basically, I think I've said this before multiple times, but Belo Horizonte, my hometown, we're known for bars. So bars, bars, and bars. That's all that you're going to find there.
That's why Steph's an alcoholic.
Yes.
I'm kidding. So guys, by the way, if you guys hear meowing, that's my cat. I have a new cat. A lot of things have happened in this two-week period where we didn't put
Carol's birthday out, right? Came and went by. Yeah. If anyone wants to buy her Amazon things, I will create an Amazon wish list for her. My birthday's coming. I have an Amazon wish list for myself. So, if you want to buy Carol's kitty a bunch of toys, just hit us up.
Her name is Chess, and she is a tuxedo cat. Oh my god, tuxedo cat. And she has a very scary face. But she... Oh, she's on here right now. Yeah, she's rubbing herself against the microphone. And making a lot of noise in my desk. She's gonna type something on the keyboard. Help me. I'm being held hostage. No, Jess. Nope.
She's like, I would like to be a co-host. I am looking at her butthole right now. I guess she's the mascot right now.
I'm trying to pick her up. She won't let me. So we just have to live with her on the desk right now. So hang on. Because she...
it's very funny. A bunch of things. Very amused watching Carol struggle with Chess. Oh, God. I am also adopting a cat in the future. So she will have her chance of laughing at me. Don't worry about it.
You should adopt a cat and name it Checkers, just Checkers. So it's like a...
Maybe my other, like, future cat, because my one future cat already has a name. I will not tell you all, because I don't want people copying my cat.
It's an amazing name, by the way.
Yeah.
So she was the third of five kids and the daughter of Syrian immigrants, Gataz Asar Kuri and Jamila Jacob Kuri. I didn't know she was Syrian. That was like a new information for me.
I didn't know there were Syrian immigrants in Belo Horizonte.
Yeah.
Like
there is. I mean, but yeah. The story is not in Belo Horizonte, but at the time we're still there.
Yeah, like blows my mind. Actually, this is very ignorant of me to say this right now, but I don't know a lot of like immigrant communities in Belo Horizonte, like where they're from.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, yeah. So the Kuri family, they were very, very Catholic, although they're not like the Roman Catholic kind. They're like a Greek, Middle Eastern type of Catholic that I had never heard, but exists, and that's what they were. And the family actually
because he's Syrian. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, it's fine. So the family relocated to Rio after the father dies. When Aida was just like 6 years old. Times were really tough for the family of six. Because she was like third of five kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot. And the mom was forced to put Aida, who was six at a time, in a boarding school named Educandário Gonçalves de Araújo, which was ran by Spanish nuns. What a mix, right? So it's, she's Syrian in Brazil, Greek Catholic with Spanish nuns, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is located like right outside of the city of Rio. And it wasn't like the mom was abandoning Aida, though, by any means. It was just like the only option of childcare that she had at the time. She would visit Aida every so often, and they were pretty close still. Aida was, by the nun's standards, a very good kid. She got straight A's. She was extremely well-behaved. And something that helped a lot was that she was super religious, so she fit right in with the nuns.
Ugh.
She played the piano and was really into hymns. No, like, I have a good experience with nuns. Like, I haven't had a, you know, bad time with nuns myself. I went to, like, a Catholic school for a period of time. And the nuns were, like, chill. They're pretty good. And, like, I had the impression that it was kind of like that there, too, but no more intense, right? Because it's, like, literally a boarding school and she never left.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she was happy there, I think. She played the piano and she was really into hymns. Aida loved living at the school. She really thrived in there. But when she turned 18, she had to go. That was in 1958. She moved back home with her mom and one brother in a small apartment in the Gavia neighborhood of Rio. She initially stayed home helping around the house, but quickly she realized that it would be better for everyone if she just got a job at her brother's business. She started studying English and typing to fluff up her resume a little bit because she deserved better. And isn't it like fascinating how people used to take like typing classes?
My sister has a typing certificate from like the 90s.
That's I think that's super cool. Like, you know, today we're kind of like born into typing, but you know, back in the day, like, was fucking hard, right?
Mm-hmm. Especially because my sister, like, I feel like my sister was the last person ever to take a typing course on a typewriter. And, like, typing on a typewriter is different than, like, a computer keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to learn how to use the machine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, both of the classes that she took, English and typing, were in Copacabana, which is basically right next to her neighborhood in Gavia. So, if you ever been to Rio, there's, like, you know, the Ipanema, which, you know, is where that famous song is from.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, like, the beach. It's, like, basically three neighborhoods, Ipanema, Copacabana, and another one that I forgot. And then there's a lake, like, a big lake. And Gavia is like right across from the lake from Copacabana, but she doesn't take a boat to Copacabana, obviously, so she has to go through like three other neighborhoods, but it's like a 15 minute like trip. It's not
too bad.
It's not a lot at all. Yeah, it's like super close, so it's not like she was taking an hour bus to get to her class, you know. It was very close. So Copacabana at the time is not what it is today. Today is very urban, but at the time it still had a small town feel to it. The whole neighborhood was basically residential. Copacabana and other neighborhoods of Rio were also going through an interesting phenomenon. So Rio was going through a very like important cultural boom at the time with Bossa Nova, etc. You know, like, it was a time that people were super into music and super into, like, you know, the bohemian lifestyle that they call. And young adults would associate themselves with groups of other young adults to basically be young adults together. So the so-called turmas, which we're going to translate as crew or groups,
yeah,
were created at the time. So now, we're not saying that these are gangs or anything like that, but each group has their own personality and different levels of criminal activity. Some are really tame. They would just hang out in the streets listening to Bossa Nova or go to the movies to watch, like, Tom and Jerry. That's, like, wholesome, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Tom and Jerry is amazing.
Yeah. Others, they're very, very, very rebellious for the teenagers at the time. One of those rebellious and quote-unquote criminals ones were the Playboys. They were called the Playboys. They gather at movie theaters to watch James Dean and Elvis, and they dress like them. They make their hair look like theirs. They listen to rock and roll, and that was outrageous. That was, oh my God, look at, because, you know, what happened to Elvis, that, like, you know, it's outrageous that he's dancing like that. Can you imagine in Brazil, like,
yeah,
it's, yeah. So they hop on their little motorcycles and terrorize the city. Just like, I don't think they're doing much, just like being themselves and like being kids. But it was like a different, like, you know, aesthetic that people are not used to. And then, oh my God, you know. So these were middle to upper middle class kids who had no jobs or responsibilities. So they're not like, you know, the poor kids. They're like privileged white kids, basically.
Mm-hmm. So. But we are talking about a few Playboys specifically. First off, the king of the jackasses, Ronaldo Guilherme de Souza Castro. He was 19, from a rich, old money family, and a horrible person. He was a bad, 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 bad student. Not only did he fail classes left and right, but he was also expelled from multiple schools. Ooh, what a dream. For a rich kid, that's very uncommon.
Yeah, because rich kids don't get expelled.
Yeah, like, are you kidding
right?
me?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. No. On top of all of that, he was a known thief. He would steal cars, jewelry, do all sorts of petty theft. He would always get caught, but daddy would come to the rescue with some classic bribery, so he never really suffered any consequences. One time, he tried to pimp out his cousin, and he got super mad when the arrangement didn't work out. Like, who are you, you little shit? Like,
and dude, I want to punch him in the face so bad. He looks punchable. I don't say that often, but like, dude, let me show you a picture of him.
Okay.
Cause I don't know. He has some like stupid sunglasses that he always wears. All the pictures, even like in Trial, he's wearing those fucking sunglasses, and it looks plain ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Like, the sunglasses are so distracting, I can't even like say what he looks like. Like, who does he look like? Like, really?
He looks,
is there like any celebrity? Dweeb. Like, I have no idea.
Freaking dweeb. So the next member of this gang-ish is Cássio Murilo Ferreira, who was related to the property manager of the building where the crime happened. Cássio, just like Ronaldo, had been expelled from school a couple of times. One time because he was sexually harassing girls, lifting up their mm-hmm. skirts and all. So, like, this gang is comprised of, like, the sweetest boys in the neighborhood.
What a prince.
Like, God. Then there is Antônio João de Souza, who was 26, and he was the doorman of the building. Not much is ever said about his personal life, though, so we don't really know.
Now, right to the crime. On July 14th, which is actually Matt's birthday, Aida and her friend Ione left the typing class on foot. It's our understanding that they were walking to the bus station together. They walked past Ronaldo and the Playboys, who were not even on their turf, by the way. They were, like, right where another, like, gangish, you know, resided. So, what are they doing there? I don't know. The reenactment on Linha Direta is hilarious. Like, if you guys can watch it, you should. They put Bela Gil to play Ione. And that woman's a meme. So, I'm, like, looking at her expecting to, like, go on some... Yeah, it's weird. I was like, dude, I know her. But it was fucking Bela Gil. And I'm like, what the fuck? Anyways. I don't know if this is exactly how it went in real life, but it's likely that they based that off of Ione's testimony, which I didn't have access to. But here's how the reenactment goes. So they're walking, and then Ronaldo just goes, "Wow, ladies, you dropped your keys." But they're like, "Yeah, those keys are not ours. Those keys are not ours." So he's like, "Oh yes, yeah, sorry. That must be mine then. I got so many keys that I get confused sometimes."
Okay.
Yeah, right. And then that goes right away to, "Oh my God, where are you two heading?" And, "Oh my, you're too pretty for the bus. I'll drive you home."
Oh my god, that's literally how my dad picked up my mom. Like, that's how my parents met.
Oh my god.
I'll tell you guys, I'll tell you the story of my parents meeting at the end of the episode.
Oh my god. So, I think you probably told that story already, but tell it again, just in case it was like, you know,
I'll tell you the limbo end of the episode. I don't want to distract you from the case.
Okay, okay. Anyways, so of course, the girls say no, but they kind of don't walk away. They're just kind of like trapped within a conversation. Ronaldo is not letting them go. At that point, Ronaldo has grabbed Aida's glasses and her purse and maybe or her ring. And that is flirting for him. That's how he does it. He like steals girls' things and...
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is the worst. Like, can you imagine, like, a guy just fucking stops you and, like, start grabbing your stuff? Like, literally your things. Like, come on. Anyways, so the girls, they try to leave, but Ronaldo is very persistent. He says that she'll only get her belongings back if she tells him more about himself, about herself.
Creep.
Yes. So, Yoni was on a rush. She had somewhere to be, and she had a split. She basically left Aida there. I don't blame that on her. Like, she has her own life. But, I mean, I don't think she saw the situation as dangerous. They're probably close to the bus station. Like, you know, there's no harm in Aida walking. And maybe, you know, they walk her to the bus station. Like, it's two guys. Like, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, Ronaldo sweet talks Aida into going to an apartment by the seaside to look at the view.
What? I don't know. I feel like people were too trusting back in the day. I'd be like, bro, who the fuck are you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. So, although some sources says that she agreed to go into the apartment to listen to some music or because he was offering an English lesson. So, he offered her something and brought her to an apartment. Mm-hmm. So, while researching this, I read many, many times that Aida was naive, that she was, her ingenuity, like, tricked her and stuff, that she was too innocent because she was very sheltered because of the whole nunnery situation. And I think that might be true, but that's an oversimplistic way of looking at things. I don't see how she would not have perceived the danger in a situation like this one. Because, like, even if she was super sheltered, she still knows that there's evil in this world and she knows that rape exists.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't believe she was that naive. I don't believe she was stupid. Like, I just cannot look at the situation like this. And the key here is that she must have trusted Ronaldo for many reasons. Maybe because he was a sweet talker, because he looked like someone who was trustworthy. He looked like a movie star or something. He did not, quote, look like a criminal. So blaming this crime on Aida's innocence, it's not fair to her at all. We need to stop talking about this crime like in those terms.
Like, she's a baby, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, she's 18, but she's not fucking stupid. So, sure, say that it was naive for her to believe that you go anywhere with some guy and just expect to just look at the sea or listen to some records. Like, all right, that's kind of naive. But really, that's not the issue that needs to be fixed here. It's not that she needs to be more aware of things. Like, the crime is not on her, you know?
Yeah.
And it sucks that people talk about her being so naive. They're not even trying to victim blame, but that's kind of implied when you say stuff like that.
Yeah, because if you... Yeah, exactly. Like, I apologize for saying that people were too trustworthy. I did not mean it as a victim blaming type of thing. But yeah, that's exactly what happens.
No, but you're right,
yeah. People will be like, well, exactly. Why did she go with him? Like, because... Like,
yeah, she was trustworthy in the sense that, like, she trusted and nothing bad was going to happen to her. Because if she felt like she was in real danger, she would have just left the purse, the glasses, like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like this guy was physically, like, intimidating her or anything. Like, I don't think she felt like she was in danger.
Yeah.
But it's what you said, though, is a different tone than what other people say.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to clarify.
No, totally.
So, the official version of the events goes as follows. Ronaldo takes her to the 12th floor of an apartment building at the prestigious Avenida Atlantica, which is right by the seashore. A friend of his, Cassio, has the keys to the apartment because of his uncle. Neither of them lived there, and the apartment was vacant. Once they get there, they're joined by another accomplice, Antonio, the doorman. It sounds like all of this was planned, that like there is like a plan going on.
Yeah, it totally sounds like it, because they had like codes, like, you know, like when I press the button, you come up or some like stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just having that ready, like, yeah, I have the key ready for the apartment so I can go up there with this girl. And then he basically, like, I didn't see that, like, in official versions, but it said that, like, Ronaldo was like, if you guys let me use the apartment, then you guys can come in, get in with the fun, too, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what happened. And, like it wasn't...
He's douchey enough to say something like that, so...
Yeah. Yeah, and this is it's literally the scenario of someone that looks at a girl and this is something that it's his to take. It's something that, like, it really doesn't matter if she wants to go up there or not. Like, her consenting to go up on an apartment with him is enough consent for a gangbang, and that's, like, mind-boggling. Like, how does that work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The three of them then attempt to rape Aida. But she fights back. Good for you, girl. They beat her up until she passes out. They probably assume that she's dead. The only way to deal with the situation, they figure, is to make it seem like she killed herself. So, naturally, they threw her out of the balcony. Like, first of all, do you really think that the cops are not gonna notice that she's beat up? Like, what?
Like, it's a really tough fall.
Yeah, let me punch myself multiple times before I jump out of this balcony. They even go as far as to go to the body after the fact and place Aida's belongings next to the body as if it wouldn't look suspicious whatsoever, to try and convince people that she had killed herself. What a fucking bunch of morons. The autopsy on Aida's body showed that she was probably not raped, although it is not a stretch to assume that she was. She had many defensive wounds, also scratches on her thighs, her stomach, and her neck. Probable bite marks were also found on her chest. Punches also busted her upper lip, this poor girl. Ronaldo confessed to that punch. What happened was that they beat her up until she passed out, basically. It is suspected that more than one person beat her at the time, because otherwise she wouldn't be stressed enough to faint. It is said that the attack went on for 30 minutes and that Aida fought hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. 30 minutes. That's, like, so fucked up.
That's a lifetime when you are... Yeah. Like, being abused.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine, like, 30 minutes of a woman yelling in an apartment building and no one heard anything in a residential neighborhood that Copacabana was at the time.
Yeah.
That's disturbing and worrisome, to say the least.
Yeah.
So the defense's narrative says that the trio did try to rape her. That happened, but she threw herself to avoid the rape.
Yeah, sure.
That narrative is still believed by some to this day, but forensics show that it was probably not the case, you know. They did a reconstruction of the crime scene and tried to match shoe prints from the balcony with a fall, like her throwing herself, and it was only consistent with her being thrown, not throwing herself. And also, like, she fell with, like, her books and stuff. And imagine the situation, like, there's an attempted rape going on. Would you grab your books and jump?
No, I would just be like,
exactly,
like, it doesn't make sense here. I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, let me think about my studies as I freaking crack my skull into the cement.
Doesn't make any sense, man. And they even say that her motto was like, I'd rather die than sin. And that gets propagated a lot, like, to basically further that narrative that she killed herself to avoid the rape, when that's not what happened. Something that also happened in the midst of all this is that Ronaldo's dad bought a fake witness to give Ronaldo an alibi. Zilza Maria Fonseca, she was going to testify that she was talking to him at a bank at the time Maida was thrown.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't show up at the trial, though. She just didn't show up. So they had to buy another lady, Lissy Lopez, to testify that she saw Zilza and Ronaldo talking to each other and kissing and stuff at the bank. And what's funny is that this lady had absolutely no clue about what was going on. She didn't know what Zilza looked like. She didn't know anything. And even Ronaldo, like, he wasn't, like, briefed with the story that he was supposed to say. And so his story didn't match Zilza's. It was, like, hilarious. And the judge was like, so you don't know anything about your case? You don't know anything about your story?
This sounds like a load of baloney, my friend.
Yeah. And what's most hilarious, too, is not one of the articles I read about this from Cruzeiro, they said something like, yes, because Ronaldo is too stupid to like memorize a version of the story that's not true.
I mean, he doesn't like sound he was such a bad student bright, he can't so I don't think they're yeah. wrong but but it is funny.
I just thought this was so funny. I'm sorry, but it fucking is. So the first time this case went to trial, Ronaldo was sentenced to 37 and a half years in prison. Antonio to 30, and Cassio was still a minor, so he got zero. He got nothing.
Great. I love the justice yeah.
system. You're going to love him even more after this. So, of course, they appealed, and the second trial happened not even a year later in 59.
Wow.
This time around, the defense focused on the bite marks, and it was proven that Cassio was not the author of the bites. The whole thing was so messy, though, that they didn't even try to match the other suspect's bite marks to the bite marks on the corpse. And because they got distracted by some timeline stuff with Ronaldo leaving or not leaving the building. I'm not even going to include this because it's too fucking boring. I hate that kind of stuff. So speaking of that, the jury accepted that Ronaldo had left the building by the time Maida was thrown, and they accepted that the only thing he did was to punch her and the punch that broke her lip. And so yeah, he was exonerated of the crime.
Fuck this.
Yeah.
Made me sneeze. Yeah. This is how much I hate it.
Uh-huh. Almost by osmosis, Antonio was exonerated too, leaving Cassio as the only culprit. Makes sense, right? They just said that he was he couldn't be the author of the bite marks, so there had to be someone there with him, right? But no. Let's exonerate the other two, and then all the question marks fly, right? What's happening? You know what I think is happening? I don't think there's a stretch to say that there was some bribery going on and some kind of sketchy business, exactly. Right? Yeah, this definitely sounds like that.
That's what is happening. It sounds like daddy got someone out of jail and this poor girl freaking lost her life and never got justice.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cassio was sent to juvie. He stayed there for a real short time and left straight to the army. And life goes the fuck on, right? For everybody except for Aida and her fucking family.
Yeah.
A few years later, in 1967, Cassio and his girlfriend were getting hot and heavy in the car. Steamy. And a watchman caught them. Cassio shot and killed the man. However, this time, he had time to run away. He left the country and only came back when the statute of limitations was over, which I did not know that there was a statute of limitations in Brazil. Actually, for murder. Actually, I lied. I may have brought this up in another episode, so I forgot.
No, I think, I don't know if there is now, but maybe at the time there was.
Oh, okay.
This is 1967. It's a new constitution.
Yeah.
You know.
So Antonio kind of just faded away after he was exonerated, so we know nothing about him. But Ronaldo's life went on pretty fucking normally. He got married, had kids, and he owned a gas station, which I hope someone drenched him in gas and set him on fire.
Yeah. And what's fucked up about the situation too is that there was like a whole panic going on around the Cruz gangs, etc., at the time, because then like Ronaldo kind of darkened the whole aesthetic of like the punk like rock kid that was going on. And so the police was literally rounding up like groups of kids that looked like that for like no reason and arresting them and stuff, charging them with crimes that like didn't exist. And so
dictatorship the much
kids that were already kind of rebellious, but just like dressing different, they like things just got kind of out of hand. They started wearing like Ronaldo's sunglasses just like out of spite, you know. And yeah, because these are kids, these are like 19-year-olds, you know.
This
what I mean?
Is like girls on Tumblr who have a page dedicated to Ted Bundy. Like,
yeah, yeah. And so like the police was kind of persecuting them, and so it's easy to look at this case and be like, yeah, Ronaldo was being persecuted just because he looks different, just because he's a he looks like James Dean or whatever, you know.
Anyway,
so yeah, this is what happened. And the police had to, like, by the pressure, like public and stuff, they had to stop all these things. And these like quote-unquote gangs, the crews of Rio at the time, they had a real influence in society. Like, they're not just kids. Like, they would like team up and like elect officials, you know. They're like super involved in like politics and shit. Like, it was, yeah, it's like a big thing. And so this does shape society because it shapes a generation. It's like what the youth is going on, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. So I just thought that was like a super interesting side of this situation, and how at the end of all this, even though he is a murderer, even though he is provably a horrible person, because the way society reacted to this crime, the other kids kind of started looking at him as an idol.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it was always like the contrast between Aida, so like this virginal, like almost nunnish creature that she became. In the picture of her like laying down in asphalt dead, it's like vaculated, like it's like centerfold of magazines.
I'm about to look that up.
So yeah, dude, you Google it. The second picture that shows up is her dead. It's worrisome, but still. So it's always like that, the contrast, like this is a good kid, she's religious, she's nice, and then these punks come here, and then these guys kill this lady, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know, that's a way to look at the situation, like, sure, but it's simplistic, like, let's not.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that's the thing, too, with this case, the most of, like, the news pieces and stuff done on it are not on the internet, they're like physical, and they're like in some magazine, some archive somewhere that I can't go look at because I'm not in Brazil or no. If I was in Rio, I would.
This is why we need to be able to teleport, because then Kara and I can just go to a library in Brazil and do research. Agree. Or wherever, Brazil, Argentina, wherever we want to, and do research, mm-hmm. and then come back mm-hmm. and be like, hey guys, got the episode. Yeah.
Yeah. So several streets were named after Aida, and like not just in Rio, but all throughout the country, there are several Aida Cury streets. And to this day, many regard her as a saint because she died kind of pure. I mean, she died a virgin. She died a super religious, you know, figure. And this is what happens when women die. Sometimes they become saints.
Yeah.
For some reason in Brazil. I think that interesting, that it's a very, very, very interesting phenomenon.
It happens a lot in Brazil.
Yeah.
Like, for a country so full of sin, Brazilians are very attached to saints. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, the sainthood thing, it's, we want to do this episode sometime, so please don't Google it. Like, we've been wanting to do it for years. But there's this one building that caught on fire and people died in the elevator. Mm-hmm. No one knows who these people were, so there's not even a life story. And people pray to those people that died on the elevator.
Yeah.
Because they're saints now. Which we don't know who they are. Like, I don't think that's how sainthood works, but alright.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know if Aida has granted any miracles or anything like that that would make her a saint, like, you know, in the Catholic sense. But she became like a martyr and like a figure that people do look up to. Like,
I understand her becoming a martyr, but like a saint, I feel like a lot of the quote-unquote miracles that people attach to saints are, like, coincidences. Like, oh my god, I crossed the street, I almost got hit by a car, but I didn't. Oh, it must have been Saint Carolina from the Suspiria podcast who saved me. Like,
I mean, in Brazil, we pray to saints to find stuff, you know, like...
Yes, it's... no, but I, you know what? I don't know who told me this when I was little, but someone told me that if I prayed for... Because there's a specific saint, guys, that you pray to find your stuff. Mm-hmm. But someone told me that if I prayed to that saint, I would be actually summoning a demon. So ever since that person told me that, I never prayed to that. No, I am not taking my chances. No, thank you. They're like, oh, do you know that you're actually summoning a demon? I was like, excuse me?
Let me go ahead and say this. I think that I would trust finding objects. I would trust a demon more than a saint to find an object for me.
Fine. Okay. Yeah. Keep saying that. When the demon shows up at your house, do not text me. I will not be here for you.
Yeah. No, my mom said something like that once too. I was saying something like something that was like, yeah, I'm gonna vou virar pombagira or something like that. Which nothing to do with sainthood. It's more like the African based religions. And then she looked like me dead in the eye and she was like, you joke with that, then you're gonna start dreaming with pombagira, and then you're gonna say, you're gonna be sorry for it. Yeah. And then I got fucking scared. Yeah. Like, it was terrifying. And I was like, Jesus Christ. And yeah, anyways, a lot of ignorance. But I was gonna say something else about Aida. But, oh yeah, this case got big in the media because of, like, certain journalists. I think his name was, like, David Nasser. That I don't know if he's Syrian, he might be like Lebanese, but he really like attached himself to the situation and like wrote as many pieces as he could because Aida was Syrian, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, I don't want this to be forgotten. I don't want this to be like, you know, I don't want justice not to be done because also she was dealing with rich kids, you know. Even though I think Aida was considered white, you know, but it's different. Like, if you're an immigrant, it's different.
Yes, yes.
I don't know. Yes. Who knows, right? So he really put himself in the situation to make sure that justice was served, and it ended up not being served. So that sucks, but he tried. Yeah, so also something that happened kind of recently, like, I think that happened in 2015, is that Aida's family sued I don't know which news channel it was, but they were suing because they were like keep, you know, bringing the story up and keep like showing like the reenactment and the linha direta, the reenactment. I don't know if this is the one that they were suing for, but it's tough. Like, it's a very, very long rape scene, and it's not pleasant to watch. And if I was the family, I wouldn't be pleased with, you know, that image, you know? And they were saying basically that, like, with any case, there should be the right that to be forgotten. Like, I don't know how to translate that. Like,
yeah.
How would you explain it?
Like, no, I understand. Like, you have the right to basically, let's say, I think what they were trying to say is that the family has the right to move past it and not be reminded of it constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's, like, more regarding to the family, but, like, the legal, like, I think Brazil has a kind of premise when you do a crime, when you commit a crime, it's kind of like input in the law that like time, you have the right for time to pass and for people to forget that you committed that crime, you should pay for it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think so, it's regarding to that.
Was it her family or his family then?
Her family.
Oh.
They were using that premise to like, you know, they had the right to like basically be forgotten and forget that the crime ever existed. Don't ask me why this exists, but it does. And so they just keep paying for it. Like, the family keeps paying for it because no one ever forgets that crime, and they want the crime to be forgotten. They want to move past the narrative, I think. Yeah. And if that just keeps coming up,
then they can't.
Then that sucks.
Yeah.
For them, but it's not something that the justice system really like accepted, because it was something to do with politics, because like what they call, you know, the right to be forgotten is something that politicians use a lot, and so they couldn't grant any kind of liberty for like Aida's family to remove any kind of content from television or from the internet, because that's what they're trying to do. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. They were trying to remove videos from the reenactment and stuff from the internet, so that kind of stuff stops being spread, you know? And the justice system, I think it was the Supreme Court, even said no. Like, we can't do that, because then it would open a lot of precedent for, like, politicians and other people.
Exactly.
That makes to remove sense. Information. Yeah, that the people have the right to know, basically. And so I think, correct me if I'm wrong, they didn't get anything out of this. And that was an audience that was like, you know, a mini trial, basically, to try and like, you know, resolve all these issues. But ultimately, they regarded like removing stuff from the internet as censorship.
Yeah, which... technically, and that's something
people try to often remove things from the internet.
Yeah, technically it's true, but at the same time, I can understand them.
Yeah, I understand. When I came across this, I was like, should I even do this episode, you know? So I really don't know what to think about this.
Well, if anyone from her family is listening and you want us to take down the episode, we will.
Yeah, we absolutely will. So let us know. Like, we always try to do like what we see as the most fair narrative for the victims, and we always try to be respectful and not, you know, joke around too much, and you know,
yeah,
exactly. They're just us, you know.
Exactly.
So I really hope that we did justice. I don't know.
Yeah, me too. And speaking of doing justice. We need to do justice by our freaking new logo. We haven't talked about the new logo yet.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys like it?
Do you love it?
I love it.
You love it. I love
Dude, it. Dude, isn't it the most beautiful thing you've ever seen, like, honestly?
I absolutely love it. And if you don't love it, you can suck my dick. Because it's great. No, but seriously, it's fantastic. We will link the artist who did our new logo. I think we linked her on Twitter, right? Like,
Instagram handle. Huh?
I think we linked her on Twitter, right?
Yeah, but we'll put it on the episode, like, her Instagram handle. Mm-hmm. And her name is Yasmin Boymek.
Yeah.
I think I'm saying it right.
So if you're looking for artwork, reach out to her. She's super flexible. Very easy to work with.
She's amazing.
Super cool. Very talented.
Yeah.
Made me look fantastic. So points to her. So.
She made your hair look really good. Like, it looks good in real life too. But like.
My hair does not look that good in real life. it really doesn't. But if you're looking for an artist, you know, support your independent artist. She's an independent artist from Brazil. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I think I told her to set up like an Etsy page. I don't know if she has, but you can figure things out. Just message her.
And yeah, but just for commission, cool. Like, we basically gave her like a very, very vague like premise for like, the artwork, and she like came up with a lot of stuff herself, and she came up with like a amazing color palette and stuff, and that was amazing. Like, we're looking for someone that had like, you know, some creative liberty. Yes. To, like, you know, make something look good. And she made it look amazing. And it's just, I don't know. I can't say it enough. Like, amazing, amazing experience. So, yeah, check her out. We left her Instagram handle on the show notes.
Yes.
But also, we're going to post it on our Instagram story. So, if you're listening to the first 24 hours that we posted this episode, it's still there.
Yes, 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 yes. And... yeah, I think this is it. We hope you enjoyed.
Oh, no. This. Yeah, let's mention the other thing. We also have a different podcast if you didn't know about it. If you are just now listening to us again, if you, like, stopped for a reason. Yeah, within this mist of all situations, I don't know, we create another podcast. It's called Tupini Krimi, and it's in Portuguese. So if you speak Portuguese, or if you speak a little bit of Portuguese or Spanish even, maybe you can understand it. And it's there. It's on every single thing. And it's, you know, it's there. So listen to it if you want to.
But in Tupini Krimi, we mainly cover non-Latin cases. So just so you know. Mm-hmm. We save most of the
although Latin we did ones we for did this one. We do a lot of, like, you know, we did two cases involving Latin people, but more not on the, you know, lesser known cases, which is the premise of this podcast.
Yes. If you have any case suggestions, feel free to message us. Mm-hmm. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. I saw the new reviews. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we got a new review. It was so nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's it.
Until next time. Laters, haters.
I hope you guys have a good end of the world. Goodbye.
Ciao.
I'll say it again. I said a world weird. I hope you guys have a good end of the world.
Ciao.
Was that good?
It was great.
I hope so. Ciao. Thank you for listening to another episode of Suspiria, a true crime podcast. If you are a creep and enjoy listening to all of that horrible information, please check out our previous episodes and write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
And also follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram as Suspiria Podcast. Facebook is also Suspiria Podcast. If you want to follow Carol, you can follow her at Suspiria Carol. And you can follow me at eu.steph. Note, none of us post anything interesting.
We do, actually.
If you have any case suggestions, feel free to drop them over at SuspiriaPodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to be part of this podcast, you can also email us. We promise we won't bite. Ciao! Ciao.